As you'll notice, if you wake up in the morning and your recycling can has disappeared, that is intentional. This is the week that we are picking up those recycling cans, so you don't have to worry. We won't come looking for it or put anything on your bill. But of course, starting next week is when you'll start to have the twice a week garbage pickup.
That's Mayor D.C. Reeves yesterday during his press conference talking about the recycling cans. He joins us now by phone. Mayor Reeves, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Why are you stealing people's recycling cans?
Yeah, I realized during a town hall last night, which was great. We had a great turnout debut for Casey Jones' town hall. And there's this very interesting parallel with two things that we're going to talk about, recycling and Babe Bluffs, that as I told the folks in there, you know, maybe you don't like these ideas or maybe you have, you know, anxiety about those. I understand that. But the easiest thing for the mayor to do in both of these cases is nothing. That's the easy thing to do on both of these fronts. So, you know, maybe you agree, maybe you don't agree, but I'm doing these things because I believe that they're the best decisions for the city, even when they're hard, and they're certainly hard politically. So from a political standpoint, if you think I'm only going to do the thing that's the most positive politically, this should be case in point proof that I'm willing to take on things that aren't very popular only because I think it's the right thing for the city.
I appreciate that. I actually had somebody text me and say, well, how do you know that the Bay Bluffs park structure isn't being demolished for political reasons? And was it an outside agency that did this structural survey? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that based on the political heat DC's getting over this, that he's not doing it for anything other than the stated reasons, and he wishes he didn't have to. So, yeah. You're picking
exactly.
up, going to the, you know, no recycling for a little while. But you guys say that in 30 days you're going to try to set up a drop zone, basically, where you can bring it once a week or something. We're going to staff it so people can bring in just bare bones recyclables, right? Steel and aluminum cans, high density plastic, and 2 liters, basically, right?
Exactly. And because we want to set the tone that of whatever, even though this is going to be just a very short term approach, we may keep it long term, but this is not the be all end all of our alternate to recycling. But what we want to do is let's start getting in the habits that and break away from the habits that got us here. And what I mean is, as I explained in the press conference, there's a big, big difference between recyclable, meaning it can literally by definition be recycled, and folks that are items that actually have a market, they are purchased and not put in a landfill. And so I think we need to start now in delineating what those are. And you mentioned them, aluminum and steel cans, like canned goods, plastic bottles. It could be 20-ounce, 2-liter kind of, you know, Coke bottles when you think about that. And then, of course, the heavier plastic, like the detergents, the milk jugs, the things like that. So we didn't even want to open the one day a week without having clear definition about what the kind of the overall future of what we take is, regardless of where we go from here. And because I don't want to yet again have mixed messages about, you know, what we're going to do. So, but that's our hope by November 1st. We were working through that yesterday, that you'll be able to go to Leonard Street there where our transfer station behind Pensacola High School. And every Wednesday, you'll be able to drop off those items. And, of course, we'll be advertising it.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. Let's talk about that other one, the Bay Bluffs Park. You know, you and I have talked about this quite a bit last week as well. But look, you're talking about demolition. Do you have a time frame in mind for the removal of the structure?
No. And actually, I was talking with some folks after the town hall and said the same thing. I mean, it's going to take a little bit, like any procedure like this at the city government level. That it's going to have to be RFP'd. It's going to have to be, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time. Hence the reason we're philosophically moving on it now, because that's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to have to get done. And it's frankly where we're exposed is, I know you mentioned, believe it or not, one little metal gate that says park closed is working. I know that's hard to believe,
right.
But, you know, it's just not working. People are jumping over it now, even less, you know, cops not going to walk down there because it's closed. You know, I mean, it exposes us so much more. And again, when I am told by not just an independent engineer, but our own engineer, our public works leader, Amy Tootle, is also an engineer. When we have two opinions that say it's unsafe, what other option do I have? I mean, if this is your child or your brother or your sister that goes down here, and I've been told by engineers that it's unsafe for people to go on, how can I live with myself and say, yeah, don't worry about it. You know what? Let's just keep it open because politically it's easier to do.
Let me play the sort of citizen advocate on this one more time.
Sure.
Okay. So we have a Gulf of Mexico, which has dangerous beasties And people drown in the Gulf of Mexico all the time. We don't close the Gulf because it's dangerous. We just tell people, be careful. And we do post guards, you know, to try to keep people safe as much as possible. But we know we can't guard everybody, and there's going to be problems that are going to happen. People clearly want to use this thing despite your best warnings from the engineers that it's not safe for them. My own reaction when I heard there was a gate up was, I kind of want to go down and walk it one last time before it's gone. You know, that's my, and I'm like, I'll take my kids because fine. Why can't you just say, the structure's not sound, it's not safe, proceed at your own risk until we demolish it or until whatever. Why can't we take that approach as a city?
All right, well, two things. One, the Gulf of Mexico analogy would be the equivalent of the bus itself just along Scenic Highway, you going down there. You know, we don't mandate what you can and can't do going down some either private property or whatever that's not. We are invite when there's a park that the city owns, we are inviting you generally to come there, right? It's an open park, and that's what makes that a little different. And second, look, I am happy to, if there's a nonprofit organization that wants to indemnify the city and keep this thing open and say, hey, at your own risk, we will take the risk. We've got some track record of some kind of operation. They want to temporarily do this while we go find funding. Just to show you, I am more than open to trying to find an amicable solution. I'm happy to do that. I have a feeling we're not going to get a lot of takers that want to take on the risk of that. If there was some viable solution of which to keep it open that doesn't expose the taxpayer to significant liability, it's now pretty well documented that it's not safe to open, then I would entertain any option in that front. But there's just not an option for us at the city to continue to say, welcome to our park in any way. I mean, at your own risk. I mean, there's a sign for that at every park right now that's right. Open and functioning. So, if it was just that easy and someone fell through something that we knew was broken, that's not how the legal system's going to work in our opinion. So we had this. So that's where we're at with it.
The parking lot is closed. The parking lot is closed too, right? The parking lot is closed off to deter people from parking in a place where they're not supposed to be.
Well, it's a double-edged sword there. I heard you say that earlier, and that is accurate. It's so people don't park there. But it's also, secondarily, the weird location of that when they built that side, that parking lot was that you could skip the light at Summit. So we're seeing that a lot. Where people are
really?
Coming up northbound. And then
they're driving around the light through the parking lot? I guess that's true. I guess you could, yeah.
So it's really a double-edged, really a twofold reason, I guess.
Okay. All right. We're talking to, I'd never thought of that because there's always cars in there and it seems like that would, but I can see if it stopped, that's like cutting through the gas station to get around the red light. I can see why people would do that against the law. All right. Just a quick note. I had meant to ask you this before and I forgot. The ShotSpotter that the Escambia County Sheriff's Office is putting in, they've announced their zone for doing it. Have you guys figured out a place you're doing it? I assume you have.
Yeah, we have a more contiguous. I know they have a couple different sections they were looking at. Ours is ultimately going to run on the east side from kind of the Tarragona, maybe even a little further east, all the way basically through Pace Boulevard. And think about the north side of Cervantes, kind of that rectangle there.
Okay.
Pace to the west, Tarragona to the east, Cervantes to the north will be our 3 square miles there. And we continue, the update is we continue to work on where we're going to put those sensors. Some are going to be on our utilities. I actually just had a phone call with FPL this week to talk through some places we want to attempt to put them there. There's some complication to that, but they're working with us to find the best options that they may have or their partners may have in and around there. So working on that installation, our hope is sometime in late fall, November, December area is what we hope to have it online by.
Very good. And last thing, and I know we just don't have enough time to really get into this, but I spent quite a bit of time in the first part of this hour sharing the perspective from your arborist, who I thought was very great about the challenge of the tree need in poor neighborhoods versus the tree need in nicer neighborhoods. And what you have is volunteers and neighborhood associations who are willing to do the work and put in the trees and defray the cost. And so they basically get about a 10-to-1 multiplier for the number of trees in the ground taken care of over time in nicer parts of town versus in, you know, poorer parts because of the whatever reasons, there are a bunch of them. And so for the short, more bang for the buck, funding the neighborhood associations to do a lot of this work instead of the city putting their own money in. I thought this was a fascinating and very transparent conversation about just making there be more trees. Am I understanding it properly? And is this kind of how the at least next level of funding is going to go? Probably more to the neighborhood associations, to those rather than to the tree deserty kind of areas?
Well, really the brunt of our dollars, and we're excited about that $1 million grant we got for the urban forestry grant, which ultimately is $700,000 is going to be for tree planting in underserved parts of our community. And so, if you expect our entire tree planting trust fund is somewhere in the $250,000 range.
Right.
So that's what the city has to plant trees. We just added another $700,000. So that's going to be an awesome injection into that. Now,
right.
The one delineation I'd make that we discussed was that was one $5,500 proposal that came through the Neighborhoods Association. And the reason that the dollars are more efficient is that we aren't going to be required, we, the city, are not going to be required to water them. And one of the things I did when we came in is we actually identified what it costs to plant a tree. We just used to have kind of a throw up number there. We just put it on the board and said $500. No, we wanted to add labor and time. What does it actually
cost
the city to plant a tree? So, and it's about $1,600, it turns out. So you heard our arborist, Chris, talk about that, is to say, hey, when we're responsible for it, it's going to be about $1,600. But if a neighborhood is going to buy a tree for $100 and they're going to put it in their own yard, and we just hope that it's self-policing and the fact that they want the tree in their front yard to not die, then they're going to water it and they're going to take care of it. Well, then that's a much more efficient way to handle those dollars. So I think really in the end, what we talked about there is, hey, for $5,500 for us to get hundreds of trees out of that, and even if the efficiency is 70-75%, that's still going to be a great net positive to our tree canopy as a city. But we've got to be more meticulous and more frankly, significantly more funding to solve the greater issue that our country sees, which is when you live in a poorer part of a city anywhere in the United States, the sidewalks 10 to 15 degrees warmer. And
right.
These are people that also don't have access to a vehicle and are walking and are biking to work and really probably, frankly, need it less aesthetically and more for human quality of life.
Right, right.
And so that's what we're really excited about.
Very good. We always like to end with, and that makes sense for help me understand that. We always like to end with the lightning round. So these are the easier questions to some people's mind. First question, string cheese. Do you pull the strings and eat them that way, or do you get a hot dog?
I mean, you have to do the first thing, right? Is it legal to?
Well, Candy's a lawbreaker, and let us throw a loan on that. Good for you. I'm glad you're a civilized human. Name, if you can, Candy's calling me a jerk, a creepy movie scene that really messed with your head, maybe for a time, maybe you saw it as a kid, but what was that scene in a movie where, like, it was too real for you?
Ooh, you know what? I have too much stuff in my life to watch scary movies, you know, as it is. I don't need any more when I'm sitting on my couch, but I don't know. You know, the Blair Witch Project affected me.
Oh, a little bit. Interesting.
It's not so much a scene. I mean, it was just real at the time.
Yeah, I can see that.
That dates me, but yeah, it's not so much that one. Maybe the scene at the end.
And now every time they shake a camera, you get triggered by that. I can see how that
exactly.
would work. Last thing is, okay, on your bed, you know, in your home, do you have one single large duvet, comforter, whatever you want to call it, or do you guys have, like, the split? Each of you have your own one so that you can scrunch and move and wiggle without having to affect the other person?
Just the one.
Okay.
But we also have a 60-pound dog, so there's no wiggling, there's no, you know, there's...
that's the comforter weight, like a paperweight.
Whatever claim you stake when you go to bed is the territory you get to wake up in the morning.
Hey, follow-up question. What kind of dog is it, and what's its name?
Bernadoodle, and his name's Leonard. He's about to be two in November. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
He's the smartest dog, or the dumbest smart dog.
Either way, I think we all can relate. That's perfect.
Leonard Reeves.
There you go. DC, thank you so much for the time, Mayor of City of Pensacola, DC Reeves. Always good to talk to you. We look forward to the City Council meeting tomorrow night, and then our conversation next week, sir. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.